It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 93% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Yeah, you're going to go down soon.
I'm in the 90s.
I'm planning some Skype calls that you're not on.
I'm there in spirit.
Your percentage is going. But you know, right now, like 93 is good. It's like when your health is all the way up and you're like, on a video game, you're like, this guy can shoot me a few times.
Yeah, I can take it.
I don't really care.
That's how I play video games. I can get a couple hits.
Right.
It's cool.
This is actually a slow news week. This is one of the few slow news weeks we've had. Nothing really major has happened. No big trailers. We've seen some pictures of stuff.
Yes.
So some pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange.
Those look amazing.
They really do.
He looks good.
I was amazed by how traditional he looks.
Yes. Anytime they go traditional, I think it ends up being better. And a good example is like The Vision, where he looks ridiculous, and then in the movie they're like, yep, he's going to be a guy in green and yellow, and he's going to have
a red face. Yeah.
Yeah, totally great color scheme. And he looked phenomenal. And the first couple pictures, they did a couple, I saw some concept art for like the Sanctum Sanctorum. We saw a couple set photos of him on set, and then we saw the official release of, like, all right, here he is, here's what he looks like. And he looks like Iron Man looked in Iron Man 1. He looks dead on. It looks perfect.
Yeah, he looks amazing. And it's
the only disappointment is he doesn't have leopard print gloves.
I'm fine with that. But you know, when he's casting a spell, it has, like, little runes and sigils in it.
Yeah, it looks
great.
That
was beyond what I expected to see. We also got this week we also saw hints. I posted this, and nobody saw it on the page because it got reposted back to me a million times. But Lego is doing a gigantic Adam West Batcave set,
which is
with a full Wayne Manor and bat poles that go down.
It's crazy.
It comes with 9 characters. It's like Alfred and Joker and Catwoman and
Aunt. What's her name?
I think Aunt Harriet might
Aunt
be
Harriet.
In it. It's looking crazy. But literally, I saw it, posted it. 11 people saw it on our page, which was weird because 1,000 people saw the Donald Duck Kylo Ren gif.
Yeah, that was great.
Which is hilarious.
And Harriet got added to, like, so, like, Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, they weren't, like, there wasn't, like, homosexual in any of those?
She was in the comics first.
Oh, really?
She was not created by the TV show, but for the same exact reason.
Yeah. Because of that... that idiot.
Because Seduction of the Innocent.
That fucking guy.
We could do an hour on that.
We could.
But we didn't.
We
do
might.
Well, and that was the thing. When we were looking at the news this week, we didn't have a big guest. Most of our regulars were out.
It's a weird time of year.
It's a weird time of year. It's January.
Yeah.
And we already did our big 2015.
Yep.
Some guests are going to come back, which I think want to talk about Star Wars again, because we have not stopped talking about Star Wars as
Neither has the internet.
A planet. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Just everyone is still, and I've seen a billion think pieces of like why it's good, why it's bad.
Yeah, and I've heard enough, the overwhelming majority obviously still is really hip to Star Wars, digging it, but I have started to hear a couple of dissenting opinions, which is refreshing. No one hates it that I've talked to personally. I'm sure people on the internet, there's always like those trolls that want to hate things that everyone else likes, and I've been guilty of that myself more than once, but like...
Well, once things get too big...
Yeah,
once a movie makes more than $500 million,
well, past Avatar.
A lot of people are mad at it now.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, and now it's past Avatar domestically, but not worldwide.
Well, and even it doesn't count for inflation, because I think Gone with the Wind is still like counting for inflation is still the record, because like a movie cost a nickel and people had nothing to do to distract from how horrible life was.
Yeah, if you add it up for ticket sales, Gone with the Wind is still unbeatable. The original Star Wars is still way ahead of Force Awakens.
Really?
Just for inflation. Yeah, none of the other Star Wars films have come close to that first Star Wars.
Mm.
But also, the problem with that is you can't just go by ticket sales, because back then, when Gone with the Wind and even up to Star Wars, really the only way you could see a movie was by going to that movie.
Yeah. You know? You couldn't. There, you couldn't wait for a Blu-ray.
I remember it was a big deal when Star Wars, premiered on television, just on network television. And by the time it had premiered on television, Return of the Jedi was already out in theaters.
Oh, that's
wild. So the only way you could see Star Wars between Star Wars and Jedi was by going to a theater. And they would re-release it and re-release it and re-release it. You know, so there were no VCRs.
Yeah.
There was not much of cable. You know, now the box office isn't that.
You didn't even have to go to see to a theater to see Star Wars. You could just illegally watch it online.
Oh, yeah, you could probably watch it right
you
now.
You know, it's like we used to work at 10th Planet back in the day when 10th Planet was still a thing. It is in Indiana, but, like, the original in Oak Lawn is long gone. And this guy would come in every week, and he would sell, like, DVDs of, like, whatever, like, the newest movie was. Like, and we would just buy, like, tons of them off them and just watch, like, Dark Knight, you know, or whatever.
Were they, like, really bad bootleg copies?
Some of them. He'd tell you, like, all right, this one's a handheld camera. This one's, like, a screener copy. But this guy, he would, like, just, that was his job. He walked around with a backpack, and he just sold movies out of his backpack in Oak Lawn. Hopefully he's still doing it. He's
great.
Well,
probably not, because now you could just go on BitTorrent.
Right, yeah, now it's, yeah, this was 8 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, there have been several films that we've covered where you were like, I got it.
I watched it. Well, if movies weren't so fucking expensive and I was making a little bit more money.
Yeah, so we've heard a lot about, like, the interesting backlash to Star Wars, and this is not, we haven't even introduced our topic yet, but the interesting backlash to Star Wars I'm seeing now is that, oh, it's too much like the original Star Wars. And there's a petition to get George Lucas to come back.
Yeah, I saw that online, and that was horrifying.
It. Yeah.
That's probably where I saw it. And
well, I post on the post, on the news item, I said, if this happens, Disney's first negotiation to be to get their $4 billion back.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of money, so
We don't
want him back.
No, we don't need, you know, he hates Force Awakens. He hates it.
Yeah. And he hates it because everyone else loves it, I think.
Well, and that's, now I'm seeing, well, he hates it because it's like the originals, and it is doing, Force Awakens does exactly what you love about Star Wars, and what we love about Star Wars is not what George Lucas likes about Star Wars.
Yeah, George
Lucas, I
feel
like he's interested in completely different things in Star Wars than most of the people
who go to see it. Than 98% of the people who are fans of Star Wars.
So he doesn't like that it repeats the same beats. And now I'm reading a lot of articles that's like, oh, it's just kind of A New Hope again, but now Luke's a girl, and BB-8 is R2-D2.
Yes.
But I think that's necessary because the prequels went so far left field, and they didn't feel like Star Wars at all. Like, this is a way to get them back. This is the Batman Begins of Star Wars.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, we've talked about this a thousand times earlier, but it's something where this first movie is necessary to ground the franchise again in what people loved originally. The next movie will be the big, different, they'll be able to explore and do their own thing.
Right, and sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't. But that was when that happens in comics all the time. That's the cyclical nature of comics. When you look at these characters, and that's the thing I love the most about comic books, is that you have characters that have existed for 75 years without a break.
Yeah.
So you can kind of just watch them go off the rails and come back, and then go off the rails and come back.
It really is like kind of every decade or so, they lose every character. Not always the same decade, but, you know, they lost Batman for a long time in the 60s and 50s. They didn't really know what to do with Batman.
Right.
Then they brought him back, and then, you know, they did the Azrael shit, and that kind of lost him again. Then they brought him back. Then they're kind of losing him again, and he'll come back. It's
yeah, they kind of lost him in the 2000s with, like, Bruce Wayne Murderer and Fugitive.
Yeah, and now he's kind of gone again because they're doing, like, Gordon is Batman and all that stuff.
And
you know.
And I think what happens with that is, as you keep going back to a character, trying to find new stories, you're always trying to top the last story. You're always trying to do something a little different from the last story. And then you do that enough, it's like creating a Jenga tower. Eventually, it's just going to start leaning over. It's not going to be a straight path anymore. And that's kind of the arc it always is, of like, there's always that back to basics approach.
Right.
Of like, hey, like it was like Spider-Man with Brand New Day. Or
exactly.
After the Clone Saga of like, hey, we've got this crazy story that's going to shake everything up, and it's something we've never done with Spider-Man before. And then we realize, oh, yeah, that doesn't fit the character at all. Oh, it's back to basics.
Right.
And that's what we're doing with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Is that Lucas was like, oh, it's midichlorians and pod races. We watched Phantom Menace this morning.
Why did you do that?
Because after I've seen Force Awakens twice now. I actually saw it in IMAX 3D last week, and I enjoyed it.
I don't like 3D. I like IMAX. And
I don't miss 3D
thing.
when I don't see it, but I figured if I was going to see it again, I was going to have a different experience.
Sure.
This was the only Star Wars movie I've ever seen in 3D. It's only the second movie that's ever been made in 3D.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. The most fun was when the Star Wars crawl comes up on this.
Oh,
on
yeah.
The screen. Like when the words come up, they're actually just floating in space.
That's awesome.
And they're like a separate unit, and that was really cool.
Yeah.
And Ben had a good time. He was trying to grab X-Wing fighters as they went by. So it, you know, it didn't add anything to it, but it didn't detract. But then we watched the original trilogy again, and now he's into the original trilogy, and I'm like, all right, let's watch the prequels again.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let me just start from episode one, we'll work our way up. And we didn't finish it.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like a half an hour in, and I'm like, this movie is not made well.
It's not a good movie.
And I'm reading all these articles now about like, oh, we never appreciated how good the prequels were because Lucas was really trying to do something different, and J.J. Abrams is trying to do the same thing. And I watched Phantom Menace this morning, I'm like, yeah, but he wasn't successful.
Yeah, clearly he was trying to do something different in 30 years of plus of not making Star Wars movies.
He won't come back.
Yeah, he won't come back with the same approach. But they're not good movies.
No,
you know,
they really aren't.
You really have to watch like a fan edit of them, or really have to force yourself to appreciate certain things.
Yeah,
in
I've
them.
Heard about the Phantom edit. I've never seen it, but I can't see how it rescues it.
Whereas the
Hobbit Tolkien edit, which I've talked about on this show.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard that show, somebody online took all three Hobbit movies and only put in what was actually in the book and came up with 1 4-hour movie. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So like when Peter Jackson was actually shooting that book, he did a really good job. I don't feel like the stuff we knew was supposed to happen in Star Wars about like Anakin turning into Darth Vader and having Luke and Leia, I don't think he did that stuff well enough for me to watch only that and enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think that's the real trick of it. It's not believable that Anakin goes from like the teenager to like slaughtering sand people to killing children to being corrupted by that terrible guy who plays the emperor with like the no.
That is so bad. That is the same guy that plays the Emperor in Return of the Jedi, though.
Is it?
Lucas cast the same actor.
It's cool that he used the same guy, but I mean, that was so over the top, ridiculous. It was like,
well, you can even feel Samuel L. Jackson going, "This is a little too big, isn't it?"
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing is like, you know, we were talking about at the store the other day. All those Jedi show up to like arrest the Emperor. And in the Clone Wars show, I never watched, but all the guys are telling me, like, Kit Fisto, the green guy with the tentacles and the big black eyes and all the other guys, they're all supposed to be, like, master badass Jedis. And he, like, goes through them like a hot knife through butter, and it's like, these guys are supposed to be the best Jedis, and he just, like, slays four of them without blinking an eye.
Because he's a Sith Lord. I could not get into Clone Wars because it was taking one of the weakest moments of the entire Star Wars saga and just stretching
drawing
it out.
Yeah.
I loved the Genji Tartakovsky Clone Wars, which he was doing right after Samurai Jack, and they had that Samurai Jack feel and almost no dialogue.
Yeah.
Those were beautiful, and he did like an hour of those, and then they did 5 seasons of the CG show that was pretty dull.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen Star Wars Rebels. I haven't been able to get into it.
Yeah, the shows I never cared too much about because it's like the people who are into them are really into them, and it seems like you really kind of got to dive in all that. And it's like, I just don't know if I care enough about Star Wars. I like the movies.
Right.
I'll rewatch the movies constantly. But to watch a whole show, 24 episodes of whatever cartoon of Star Wars is like, eh.
Well, you got to choose your thing. I mean, you've seen every episode of Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes and Avengers Assemble because Avengers is your thing.
Right.
I watched every
single Batman cartoon.
Yeah, and a lot. There are a few of them I outright do not like, but
yeah.
I've seen all of them. I don't like Gotham. And I hate watching it. I'm going to be there when it comes back. And I bought the season one on Blu-ray because there was a Black Friday sale.
I still got all those action figures in the store if you're looking to buy them.
I know. I might buy them.
You just might.
I just might. I have a very big Batman action figure collection, and now that is a hole.
That's the only Gotham-sized hole.
Damn it. And this is the time of year where no figures come out.
Right, it's the lull time. When's the next set of Batman animated figures coming out?
You should tell me. You own a store.
Yeah, but they don't tell me. They tell you guys this stuff first.
No, you could look at the same sites that I look at.
Who's got time for that?
That I posted on the Facebook page. I think March is the next one because Killer Croc was the final one this year. And those are still great.
Oh, those are great.
Yeah. But, you know, let's use Batman to actually get into our topic.
Yes. Hey, you know what? We're 15 minutes in. I don't think we're doing that bad for us.
No, like I said, we're a Simpsons episode of podcasts.
We are.
The first 10 minutes has just nothing nonsense to do with anything. Like, you know, next week I buy a trampoline.
Yeah.
You foil a bank robbery that Krusty runs next
week.
Yeah,
but it has nothing to do with what the main topic is.
No, but the major pieces of news this week was that the Titans pilot, which was supposed to happen at TNT, is officially canceled. So,
yeah, and I have questions about this.
Well, we never talked about it as it was in development because I figured let's wait till it premieres.
Yeah.
And honestly,
they pulled the rug out from under us.
Yeah, but honestly, one of the problems I have, and this could kind of be the bigger topic, is there's so much goddamn DC on television that I can't keep up with the stuff that's on, much less wait for another show that's coming out.
Well, I guess that's the question I have is pretty much every comic book show that's on TV is successful. Like Supergirl, we heard, wasn't so good, but then she just won an award for Supergirl or something.
Yeah, I think the ratings aren't great, but people seem to really
people
love
like
it.
People like it.
So I'm sure it'll come back for a season
right.
two.
Right. Gotham is still going on. Walking
Gotham
Dead.
Still
they're talking
does
about
well,
a
yeah.
third spinoff for Walking Dead or a second. Would that be the second? There'd be three Walking Dead shows. They want to do another one. I keep hearing.
Well, just focusing on DC, not even, not even looking at what Marvel's doing or what Walking Dead is doing, but the amount of DC on television and the fact that's crazy. I was explaining this to Renee, and I hadn't wrapped my head around it until I said it. I was like, I would say, well, Titans is not happening on TNT. And she's like, well, why isn't it on WB?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's not all on WB. And I started naming all the shows. And DC is everywhere except maybe Netflix.
Yeah.
Because you have iZombie, Flash, Arrow, all on WB. You have Gotham on Fox. You have Supergirl on CBS. A Titans was going to be on TNT.
Yeah.
You have Teen Titans Go
on Cartoon Network.
Cartoon Network, which is the latest in a long line of DC-related cartoons on Cartoon Network. We've had over a decade on that. So even though Warner Brothers owns a television network.
Yeah.
Like Disney owns ABC. Disney is just putting shows on ABC.
And Netflix.
Yeah, we're going to get Agent Carter in a couple weeks.
I think it's in between S.H.I.E.L.D., so it'll be out
in
January.
In the next couple weeks, we're getting both X-Files and Agent Carter, so in January. But, you know, Agent Carter's replacing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's been a lot of talk that maybe Mockingbird will get her own spinoff.
Yeah.
If that happens, it'll be on ABC. I personally hope it doesn't happen because I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to get a lot weaker if she's not
without her,
So I think that show kind of needs both angles to keep moving. But there was so much. Constantine was on NBC.
Yeah, and now he's coming back?
I don't know. He made an appearance on Arrow.
Yeah.
But I dislike
What about that Legends of Tomorrow show?
And Legends of Tomorrow is going to be WB.
Right.
But that's the weird thing is that Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and I guess now Constantine because he appeared on it, were all one universe.
Right.
I think Supergirl might be a part of that universe.
That's what I keep hearing because the showrunner is the same guy.
The showrunner is the same runner, but they haven't said anything explicit. But Flash and Arrow are crossing over so much that I had to stop watching Flash.
Yeah.
Because I don't like Arrow. But iZombie is a separate universe. And Gotham is a separate universe. And Titans was going to be another separate universe because I can't even see Titans tying into Gotham.
Right. Yeah, you know, how could it?
The two Batman shows. Well, although, let me step back a bit. Titans is an interesting book on its own. And I immediately go to a Batman place just because that's where my head is wired. And Robin is the leader. But it really isn't. What it is it's a minor league Justice League.
Yeah, it's like the team that works up to be... It's all the sidekicks of the Justice League, essentially, with, you know, a couple other teenagers thrown in for good measure, like Cyborg and Beast Boy.
Right, and when it was originally created in the 60s, it was only sidekicks, and it was pre-existing sidekicks. It was Robin, Wonder Girl, Aqualad,
and Speedy.
Speedy, and Kid Flash. And that was the team. I think Speedy wasn't even a full member. I seem to recall there were four members originally. But they were, it was very much in that DC Silver Age, where Bob Haney wrote a lot of it, who wrote Brave and the Bold, so the stories were crazy.
Yeah, that's Those DC Silver Age, man, that's rough stuff to read.
Batman wants to live.
It's so strange.
That, we talked about that. There's a story that that Bob Haney wrote in Brave and the Bold where Batman sells his soul to the devil because he's trapped in a well and he's scared.
That's what Silver Age was like.
DC printed that.
Right? And this week, Superman's head is an ant head.
It's been reprinted recently.
More than once.
But they were crazy, and then... But what people really remember of the Teen Titans is probably from the 80s.
It's the new Teen Titans.
The new Teen Titans, which is, I think, one of the most interesting experiments in comics, because Marv Wolfman and George Perez did it, and they added, as you were saying, they added some original characters.
Yeah.
You know, Starfire, Cyborg, Raven.
Beast Boy.
Well, Beast Boy was actually in the Doom Patrol.
Oh, that's right.
But he wasn't as well known, and I think he joins around that time. But they had added to that and created it. But the interesting thing about that was it was DC's best-selling book in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the reason it was selling so well, because it was basically a Marvel book.
Yeah, it's something I didn't know until recently, is that this was a book that was outselling X-Men when X-Men was at its height pre-90s.
Yeah, it's crazy because it was DC's best-selling title. And DC had, you know, DC's been beaten by Marvel creatively basically since Marvel started.
Pretty much, yeah, since Fantastic Four.
DC's always been kind of bringing up the rear. Batman is usually great, and there's a lot of times where Batman is better than anything happening in Marvel. But if you compare the two universes, DC's always a couple of steps behind.
Yeah.
But so... they looked at this and was like, we need a book just like Marvel. And what they really wanted was a book like Chris Claremont's X-Men. They wanted young characters that were angsty and broody and had long-running soap opera plots.
Yep.
And these long building plots. So they hired two guys who were Marvel guys.
Yeah, George Perez was coming off of Avengers.
Yeah, and
he
had done Fantastic Four before then. Marv Wolfman had created Blade. He also did a run on Fantastic Four. He did a run on Spider-Man. He had been everywhere at Marvel. He had kind of touched on everything that Marvel had done. And he was also childhood friends with Len Wein. Len Wein did a ton of stuff at Marvel. Len Wein created Wolverine.
Yeah.
And both of them kind of did runs on everybody.
They were all over the place.
Yeah. And Len Wein ended up coming over to DC too.
Yeah, he did Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Len Wein created Swamp Thing. But that's the funny thing about DC. Their two best-selling titles at that time were Teen Titans, that looked exactly like Marvel. And Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, that looked like nothing.
Yeah, it was a book that was doing something that wouldn't be done again till Sandman, probably.
Yeah, probably till Sandman. And if you look at early issues of Sandman, for the first year, Neil Gaiman is trying to write Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
It's an outright horror book that has the Justice League in it.
That's what Neil Gaiman says, is he had given up on comic books for a long time, and then Alan Moore's Swamp Thing brought him back, and he was in love with that book.
Alan Moore's Swamp Thing doesn't even look like Len Wein's Swamp Thing.
No, and that was the thing when I was watching that Secret Origin, the History of DC Comics, which, interestingly enough, doesn't talk about Teen Titans at all.
Really?
But they touch on Len Wein because they interview him and they talk about Alan Moore. And he's like, yeah, I called Alan Moore up and I said I liked his work and I wanted him to come do Swamp Thing. And he didn't believe it was Len Wein, so he like hung up on him. And then he got
I feel like everybody has that story. Like, it seems like every story when you get a call, that's your dream job.
Yeah.
Your first reaction is to think it is your friend pranking
you.
And,
yeah.
And I hear this from everybody.
Yeah.
Like, in every form of art. Like, musicians have this story. And every time I hear that story, I think of like, wow, everybody has an asshole friend.
Yeah, everyone has that guy.
Everyone has a guy who's just an asshole to them.
And then he hired him, and he's, you know, when Alan Moore's like, oh, I'd love to write Swamp Thing. And he's like, but do I have to do what you did? And he's like, no, I hope not. Do whatever you want. And that's when Moore reversed it. And because Swamp Thing was always a man transformed into a plant. This was the reverse of that, as a plant that has like delusions of grandeur and thinks
it's a man. A plant that thinks he's a man because a man died in him.
Yeah.
Right? So he kept thinking he was that man.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant run. I have the whole thing in hardcover, and it's like a lot of hardcovers because
it's a long run. I think it's five trades, and the newest printing is five, like $34 or $29 graphic novels.
Yeah, I have basically, like, I think they were 12 issues each. They weren't huge. They didn't do, like, omnibuses for these. But it was a long run, and they're brilliant. And there's also a hardcover of the Lynn Wein, Bernie Wrights, and Swamp Thing, which are also great. But that being said, it's almost a side topic, because that was basically creating Vertigo 10 years before they said, we should have a Vertigo.
Right.
And the other thing was an outright copy of the competition, which on paper fails. Like, you don't try, like if you went in to DC and was like, you know what, Batman's not selling, Spider-Man's selling, let's just turn Batman into Spider-Man.
You'd never do that.
No, because it would bomb. I mean,
yeah.
There's this famous story that Stan Lee created the Fantastic Four because he heard
Justice League.
But it's not Justice League.
It's basically... the editor of Marvel probably said, look, DC, because the golf story, they're golfing together, whatever. Yes. And all he told them, I bet, was make a team book. But then, and this is a quote from Len Wein actually talked about, is that Marvel still hedged their bets and made the Thing a monster because Monster Comics are big.
Well, the cover of the first issue
is them fighting a monster.
People finding a giant monster.
Right, just in case the team book wasn't going
to
work.
That's what they used to sell. And some of those characters lasted. Like, Fin Fang Foom actually comes from that era, pre-Marvel. There's a few giant monsters that existed.
That's where
later.
Groot comes from.
Yep, Groot comes
from that, like,
Groot
goofy
is older
monster.
Than Marvel, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was all... what I love is, like, all their names are obviously, like, Stan Lee just making sounds alone.
Yeah.
He's like... Galango! Yeah, let's do that.
Gargantuan!
Yeah, like, Jack Kirby comes in and he's like, what do you want to draw, Stan? And Stan's... They all sound like Stan trying to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like Stan on the toilet.
Muganga! Fin Fang Foom! Where's Stan? I got to draw a monster comic. Stan's in the bathroom. I'll wait outside the door.
Knocks on the stall.
Yeah.
What do you got, Stan?
What are you doing? Gormu! All right, I'll see you next Tuesday. But what's amazing is that George Perez, Marv Wolfman run was just, it took over to the point where Marv Wolfman and George Perez, the team that was doing Teen Titans, was given Crisis.
Yeah.
Was like, so obviously from a marketing standpoint, which I've noticed as I've gotten older, is the thing that interests me the most in comics. Once I got to the age where I realized they'll do whatever they want to with Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not watching the life of Logan month to month. It's like marketing is going to come in and go, this is what's going to sell. And Wolverine's going to go and do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to worry less about the motivations of why Apocalypse turned Wolverine into a horseman and why Marvel thought that would sell well.
Right. Marvel just being like, hey, he's popular. Make him a bad guy.
Yeah, so DC went to Marvel Wolfman and George Perez. They were like, you worked over at Marvel, right? Just do what they do.
Yeah.
And they did this book, and it was such a big seller after a few years. They basically went to them and was like, hey, do everything
it
now.
It was pretty much, because Crisis is pretty much like the Bible for DC continuity up until... The new 52, right. Essentially.
It is also the template for a crossover.
Yeah.
And our show last week was all about crossovers.
Yep.
And that was the big elephant in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. Crisis is...
Secret Wars was a toy tie-in that Jim Shooter dashed off on weekends.
Yeah.
Crisis took 2 years to plot.
Yeah. It's 12 issues, Crisis?
It's 12 issues. It came out a year after Secret Wars because...
They've been working on it for so long.
They had been working on it a year before.
And it's like... It's a masterpiece of comic books.
That's brilliant. My favorite thing about Crisis is the George Perez "Oh my God" shot.
Oh yeah, yeah.
George Perez does that Spielberg shot in every issue, where every Spielberg shot has a character looking up with astonishment as a very bright light shines on their face.
Yeah.
Every Indiana Jones, where he's like dirty and in a jungle, has that shot.
Yeah.
And Crisis is full of that. Whereas like
and it's always that, who's that guy in the green cape?
Pariah?
Yeah, Pariah.
He was a character created for that
series. Always him screaming. Like all the covers.
That was his power. His power was to know horrible things were going to happen and scream at them.
That's like the poster child superhero for people with anxiety.
Yeah. Which
Something
is
terrible!
Which is a lot of comic readers.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's easy to stay in your room with a 22-page book.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about Titans, and it never quite hit that height again. It became their Avengers, where it not only did it outsell Batman, which, you know, which had the sidekick in it, not only did it outsell a lot of Marvel, it way outsold the Justice League.
Yeah. Yeah, the big team books that they were supposed to look up to, it was beating in the sales charts monthly.
Right.
Which
is why I'm not surprised that they were going to do a TV show about it without a Justice League.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I don't understand is why would TNT scuttle a project that so many other networks are chasing after? So many other networks are chasing the superhero show. Why was TNT like, eh, fuck it, we don't want to do it?
Well, I'm sure that's why they greenlit it in the first place, but we don't know. I mean, you never know. Maybe it was too expensive.
Yeah.
Maybe they greenlit something else that they haven't announced yet with, like, a big, big star that would cost as much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe the pilot just stunk. You never know. It's like the Wonder Woman pilot. The Wonder Woman pilot with Adrian Palicki, who is now on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., everybody was like, that's a home run. There's going to be a Wonder Woman TV show. And then it didn't happen, and no one knew why.
Yeah.
And then they put it out online, and you're like, oh, because it stinks. Because
it was awful, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting to see, because it's, I don't know, and you kind of wonder sometimes, like, how hard is it to make, like, a good superhero show, but there's so many stinkers out there that you're just like, remember that Justice League show they were going to do
oh,
in the
90s? Never got produced.
And it's like,
awful.
It's fucking terrible. And it's like, I don't know. And it's like, that was before a time where it was like, there's like pre-Spider-Man movies and post-Spider-Man movies.
Yes.
And it's like, after Spider-Man, it's kind of like, if you're fucking it up, it's like, come on, guys.
Kind of your fault.
Yeah. It's just like, it's not hard to do, you know?
Well, what I always...
They're very formulaic.
What I always say is that, you know, there's this theory that there's never been a good number three movie. Most number three movies, people don't like that much. A lot of people, maybe the most successful one is Dark Knight Rises, and a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Iron Man 3 is controversial. Spider-Man 3 is terrible.
Yeah.
X-Men 3 is terrible. Batman Forever is terrible.
I bet Civil War is going to be good.
Superman 3 has Richard Pryor in it.
Yeah.
Maybe Captain America will break that trend. But, you know, the only number three Marvel has done so far has been Iron Man, which...
It was not...
Yeah, and I like it, but I'm not going to say it was great.
No, it certainly wasn't great. I actually like
it. I find it entertaining.
Yeah, it's entertaining at the best.
Yeah. But... And people say, oh, well, you can't make three good superhero movies. And I'm like, but you can publish stories about that superhero every month for 75 goddamn years.
And that's...
You can make thousands of stories with this guy in print that work. Why? There's got to be some way to do a movie three times.
Right.
There's got to be some way
and I think that's,
to do it every week on television.
That's what I don't understand is, you know, all right, they've done 75 years of Batman comics. Well, maybe only being... harsh. Maybe only 30 years is usable.
Maybe,
arguably.
Yeah.
Just to give you a number. That's still 30 years times 12, even if you're not even including like Batman, Detective, Shadow of the Bat, and all this other crap. There's so much material.
It's still over 1,000 stories.
It's staggering.
And most television shows don't make it past 100 episodes.
Yeah.
And you can
how
say,
many,
you
many,
can say sure, multi-part stories, but you have story arcs in multi-part episodes.
That's what I'm saying. Is just like, it's like when they can't make a good Fantastic Four movie. It's like, fucking, how have you not figured that out yet?
How have you not done the Galactus trilogy? How do you get close to doing the Silver Surfer and go, yeah, but it's really about Doctor Doom?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the Doctor Doom story where he steals the Silver Surfer's powers is the sequel
that's great.
To that Galactus movie. The Galactus movie you are never going to make is not the sequel to your Doctor Doom stealing Silver Surfer powers.
It's so astonishing to watch them repeatedly fuck that up.
And people say about Fantastic Four, oh, it's too expensive because you have all four of them have powers and then the negative zone in space. We had Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
That was five people with superpowers in a space thing where everyone's an alien and everyone has power.
Right. And there, it's not like Guardians of the Galaxy where we have to waste time. All right, now we got to show what Star-Lord does. Now we got to show what Rocket and Groot do. Now I got to show what Gamora does. Now we got to show what Drax does. Their origin is the same. You just do one origin for four people and then a second origin for the bad
guy.
That's not more origins than any other superhero movie because every other superhero movie does the hero origin and the bad guy origin in the same movie.
Right. And because it's too much to handle two completely different origins, usually the villain is kind of the same origin.
They always tie it in.
Yeah, it's like Iron Man, you know, Jeff Bridges builds a suit based on Tony's suit fights him. It's basically that, Red Skull is just the same process.
Yeah, he's
Captain
America. And we talked about that on the show, and I just watched the... Honest Trailer for Ant-Man. And these Honest Trailer things, those YouTube videos,
they're
phenomenal. And that guy does a good job. There's another group of videos that does, like, everything wrong with this in 9 minutes. And it's like, just watching a video where a guy takes a shit on a movie you like.
And it's usually nitpicky stuff.
It's so dumb.
He's like, the newspaper's in his left hand. I'm like, I don't care.
Who fucking cares? That guy's an idiot. But the guy who does Honest Trailers is great because he's real about it. He'll be like, yeah, this movie's ridiculous, but how fucking awesome is Guardians of the Galaxy? Yeah. Like, he is a fan. And he had pointed out the Ant-Man movie is the exact same movie as Iron Man.
It is.
Where it's like a bald bad guy comes up with evil technology based on the good guy's good technology. Yeah. It's like the same shit, the whole movie.
Yeah, the only thing different about it is Paul Rudd's character. Because he's a down-and-out guy who's not brilliant.
Right.
You know, and Tony's a brilliant guy that gets put in a bad situation. But that is kind of the only difference. It's still a good movie.
Oh, it's still entertaining, and that's what the guy says in the movie. He's like, well, it was still pretty awesome, and they made Ant-Man a good movie. Like, who would have thought? But, yeah, Teen Titans is something where it's not even, other than, like, Marv Wolfman, George Perez, Geoff Johns had a good run.
Yeah, well, they tried to bring it back a bunch of times. I remember
Dan Jurgens
did one in the late 90s that never worked. And
they rebooted it, I think, 3 times since the New 52 started.
Well, the Geoff Johns run, I read a bunch of the Wolfman Perez run. And I've read some of the old Bob Haney's. I've never read the Geoff Johns run.
Geoff Johns run's good. He does a lot. This is like pre-Green Lantern. I think he had done Flash. But it was like him leading
GSA,
up to like Infinite
yeah.
Crisis. So he was doing other team books like JSA, which were great. And it was good. It was a good run. And it played a lot with that like teen angst dynamic. He introduced like the new Robin in the book. He did a lot of cool stuff. But Teen Titans is a book where it's not a great book. It doesn't have as many good runs even as Fantastic Four does. It has really what I can think of only 2 really good runs is Johns and Wolfman and Perez. There aren't any other runs that I can think, oh, that's an iconic run on Teen Titans. It's like it just doesn't ever do that much, but when it does, it's
great. I think the problem with Teen Titans is it doesn't really have a premise.
Yeah.
It's a team with a bunch of characters, like Justice League, some of which you know from other books, and some of which are only going to be in that
book.
Yeah,
unique to that book.
And then we'll create stories about that, and if we do really great stories, then we have a really great book. But there's no core to it.
Right.
There's no, you know, Batman is about, you know, darkness and loss, you know, and vengeance.
Yeah.
You know, psychosis in a lot of ways. Like, you know, Peter Parker, Spider-Man is about guilt and humor and over the top, like colorful action. You know, Iron Man is about technology and responsibility. Teen Titans really isn't about that. Avengers and Justice League are kind of about the same thing about
it's the
sum being greater than the whole.
The team fighting the big threats.
Teen Titans doesn't really fight the big threats.
Yeah, and they do kind of have their own group of villains, some of which are interesting, some of which are horrifically terrible. But yeah, I mean, Geoff Johns did a little bit of like Teen Titans is a family. It's the group of teens that kind of work together, live together, train together. You know, but it's not that much different than a lot of the other team books
what you just described to me is X-Men.
Right, and that's essentially what it's supposed to be.
And the hook of X-Men is that they're all born this way and nobody trusts them because they're born different.
Right, and
Teen Titans doesn't have that. Because this guy's a cyborg, this girl's a demon, this girl's an alien, this kid's a shape changer, this kid works for Batman.
Yeah.
They come from such disparate roads that there's no one thing that book is about.
Right. And I think,
other than being teens, but to be fair, most of those runs, those people are in their 20s.
Right. And that's the thing, is they keep calling it Teen Titans, and it's like, yeah, it's not really teens anymore. Yeah. It's like, you know, some of the characters, they can use like younger characters. Sometimes they bring into the group that you could be like, all right, sure, that guy's been a teen for 30 years. Sure, he's still a teen. But
and sometimes they replace characters with other characters. So, you know, for a while, Dick Grayson was not in the Teen Titans. He was in the Outsiders. So Tim Drake was the Robin in the Teen Titans, which is fine, but now it's a different book.
A different book with a different feel. You know, they put Superboy in it, and then they put Bart Allen instead of Wally West.
Right.
You know,
which is interesting because that all kind of grew. In the 90s, Teen Titans was this institution so built on the Wolfman Perez era that they created another book called Young Justice to be a totally different book. And if I'm I'm not sure if I'm remembering this right, if it replaced Teen Titans or if it ran alongside. But that had Tim Drake and Impulse, and that had the new teens in it. But it was a totally different book.
Yeah.
What? However, when we got an animated show that was Young Justice,
it was essentially...
It was Teen Titans.
Yeah, and it, you know, maybe they were thinking Young Justice was a better name than Teen Titans, or they wanted to differentiate from, like, Teen Titans Go, or... And, I mean, that's, like, a whole other aspect of it, where arguably Teen Titans is... It's... After its big comic book run, the next most popular thing is that Teen Titans Go cartoon.
Which is the third Teen Titans cartoon we've had.
Yeah.
Because we had, about 10 years ago, in the early 2000s, Cartoon Network did a Teen Titans show that was very anime-focused. But yeah. It still had those kind of long, overarching plots. And it had, it kind of had, like, Deathstroke was a major character in it. Deathstroke being probably the biggest villain to come out of Teen Titans. He is a Teen Titans character.
Yeah.
He's one of those characters that's transcended to the point where people don't really know where he comes from. Like, yeah. Solomon Grundy or Dr. Doom. Like, you have to have seen that original appearance to know that's where he belongs.
Yeah, they kind of fight everyone now.
Yeah, because he just belongs to the DC
Yeah,
universe.
It's interesting that Deathstroke is a Teen Titans villain when it's a dude that on his own can fight the entire Justice League.
Yeah, and
which
win.
Is insane. And win, yeah.
Which happened in Infinite Crisis. And he's been included, he was included in the third Batman video game.
Yeah.
As a major Batman villain.
Right, because he's kind of like the... anti-Batman character, like, there's a dozen of.
Right.
But, like, Mercy, like, he's used in the Arrow show all the time. They use Deathstroke. He's, like, a major right. Green Arrow villain because he's, you know, he's a good villain. He's got a good visual,
and
so he gets a lot of mileage.
He's also great for heroes that don't have powers because
right.
he doesn't have powers, so it's all martial arts and weapons. So if you want that kind of fight, he's a go-to guy.
Yeah.
But he was a major villain in that first Cartoon Network show, which ran about 5 seasons. It ran a long time. And I'd only seen episodes here and there of it. I never followed it.
Yeah.
But then we got Young Justice, which we've talked about, which was, I didn't even realize this till retroactively. The thing that frustrated me about Young Justice, and I have to say, I'm not a fan of Young Justice. I found it very serious. I found it kind of slow. I watched a lot of it.
Yeah.
Not all of it. I've tried to go back on Netflix.
That's
I thought about
I
getting the Blu-rays.
Watched
but
it.
After a few episodes, I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a show that I was, I was looking for something else because of the Avengers show had ended, and I like teams. And a couple guys at the store, I mean, if they're into it, they're really into it.
There are people that love it. There are people that are still really angry
There's
that
like
it's not still on.
Petitions to bring it back. It's,
right.
It has a real big cult following. So I finally watched on Netflix at the store, which means I've seen half of it, even though I watched the whole season. And what I liked it, but it was very... Marvelized. It was, all right, here's the Teen Titans. They're overseen by the Justice League. They all have ID cards. They all train together. They live in this headquarters. It was, you know, they don't get along. They have all these personal interconnection problems, these long story arcs. I didn't mind the serious tone of it because at that point, the Avengers cartoon had turned into like a children's cartoon. It was like
Avengers
they were all...
Assemble.
Yeah, they're all very young. They put Falcon on the team who was kind of like a 12-year-old. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, and they made it more like the movie where it had the movie
cast and uniforms.
Lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Young Justice, every time I try to get into it, I just never quite cracked it. It didn't have that sense of energy and fun that like the Bruce Timm Justice League did.
Yeah.
Like I never warmed up to those versions of the characters. And what would frustrate me about it in the first season was the Justice League would come and appear and then they would go away. And they had all these new designs and they had a different voice cast. And every time they showed up, I was like, why can't I watch a Justice League cartoon that's this team? Because that's what I want to see. Like, Superman and Batman come in, and I want to follow them. And then I realized it was the same Justice League that was in the direct-to-DVD
movies. All the
movies.
DVD movies,
yeah.
Yeah,
so things like Justice League Doom and Crisis on Two Earths. It was that Justice League. It was those designs and that cast. And that ended when those movies decided to go with the new 52.
Right.
But we did actually get those Justice Leagues, and I like those movies, and I enjoy that. And I thought the overarching stories were interesting, but it's kind of my feeling about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where, and you can yell at me on Twitter as much as you want about this, because I know Young Justice fans are very animated, to use a pun. Let's just go with that
there
pun.
You
You're
go.
Animated. Is that I found the episodes a little dull, and it felt kind of like homework watching the show.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, well, I want to see where it's going, but I'm not having any fun watching it. And what was really interesting was while they were running this, Warner Brothers tried to start a DC block on Cartoon Network, and Young Justice was part of it. And they put out a lot of shows that didn't quite hit, even to the point with Justice League Unlimited, where Justice League Unlimited, I love, but in terms of numbers, that was a cult show.
Yeah, it did not do what Batman certainly was doing.
No, and actually...
And it wasn't even doing what Justice League was doing. And I think a lot of that was, yeah, the part of it was creators, you know, they were doing these long season-long story arcs, and they were using all these characters that, like I said, I'd watch 10 years of a Question show, but no one else really cared about the Question.
By that point, I mean, what I loved about Justice League Unlimited was that it was in the same continuity that went back to Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
So in my mind, Bruce Timm did a DC Animated Universe show that lasted 15 goddamn seasons.
Yeah, it was awesome.
No one's done that. But when you look at the following and the numbers, even back when Batman the Animated Series was on Fox,
yeah,
it was so influential, and it's great, and it stands up. It's a classic, you know, it's like the Flintstones in terms of television animation. You'll be watching it for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
But in the ratings, it was getting killed by X-Men.
Yeah.
Which people don't remember that fondly anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch now, looking back and seeing the difference. And X-Men's, it was entertaining. I remember loving it as a kid. And now it's like, there's a lot of screaming in this show. And there's a lot of whiny angst.
In some ways, it's not even as good as Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah, arguably.
And at the time, I was, you know, I was closer to being an adult than you were.
Yeah.
So
I was a child.
Yes. But I remember I was in college and Batman the Animated Series started. And at this point, you know, there's not much superhero stuff out there. You're
right.
Reading comics. You're getting a Batman movie every 3 years. That is it. Nothing on television. The Flash show had come and gone. You were only reading your monthly comics, so you would watch anything that came
on.
You would watch reruns of Super Friends. You would watch Spider-Man's Amazing Friends. You would watch stuff that was aimed at 10-year-olds and going, "Oh, well, I'll get out of it what I get out of it."
Yeah.
And Batman the Animated Series came on, and it just hit comic fans so right in the chest, and it had this look that was like nothing else, and it was beautiful and polished, and it had a full symphony, and it had like all of Warner Brothers resources going into it, that it just turned your head around. And I was like, this show, at the time,
awesome.
I was saying, this show is as good as The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe there were two animated shows that adults could watch. And so it had been on for about 6 weeks, and it was on every day.
Yeah.
And then, hey, here comes an X-Men show. And I remember my best friend and I, he stayed at my house that Friday night, and we got up
Saturday morning to watch
Saturday
X-Men.
Morning, we're like, here comes the X-Men show. And then it was Night of the Sentinels.
Yeah.
And there was just this like,
It's like the deflating a balloon.
And they showed parts 1 and 2 at once, which didn't actually help.
Yeah.
Because after a half an hour, you were really starting to see the
more,
cracks.
More of the same.
I remember my sister walking in, she goes, what's this? I go, oh, it's that X-Men cartoon. It's like, is this the thing you were looking forward to? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I always had that dual tier, but I imagine at your age, they were the same thing.
Not as exactly, because at that point, I had already gone to Blockbuster and rented the Pride of the X-Men animated movie.
Yeah.
And that
I like the animation in that.
That's as a kid.
It's like G.I. Joe.
It was so beautiful, that animation, that when X-Men came out, it was, even as a kid, I remember being like, well, this is so poorly drawn compared to the other show, that I was kind of a big letdown. And then they were like, the costumes I never really caught on because I liked them better in the other show. So I think really, really early, I seeing that Pride of the X-Men was being like, well, this is what the X-Men are, because I had never seen the X-Men.
Right.
And then when this new show came out, and they all had different costumes, the voices were all different, and the animation was terrible. You know, I remember just being like, well, it's good because it's X-Men and it's going to go on and there's going to be many episodes, but it wasn't, it was still a step below what I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. And then Spider-Man came out, and Spider-Man started off better than X-Men, and not immediately, but over a couple of seasons got worse.
It just got crazier the longer they did it.
Accepted that Marvel animation was kind of lame, but But going back to that, with Batman, each show they did was a little less popular than the last show. Superman was not as popular as Batman because Superman is not as popular as Batman.
Batman Beyond
was kind of the weird niche show. Like, you had to go with the premise.
I did not like it as a kid.
I did. I don't like it that much now.
I've given it a second chance, and it's kind of...
I appreciate
up.
What they were doing, and I know there's a lot of fans now who are supporting the comic book.
Yeah.
But, nah, and then Justice League, by the time they had gotten to Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, they were only talking to hardcore fans who were comic fans who had been with those shows since Batman.
Yeah.
So they were people like you and me who wanted to see Vixen and Vibe and The Question and Mr. Miracle and Big Barda. So, and at the end... Because it wasn't that big a hit, Cartoon Network was just moving around. They'd take it off for 6 months, and then they'd put it on.
Yeah, I remember I was in, I don't know. I don't know how old I was. When did it come out?
2001.
All right, so I was in high school. Yeah. And I remember being really frustrated not being able to find it. It was never on at the same time. You'd miss episodes. It was really frustrating.
And it was the early days of TiVo, so you couldn't just put in the title and find it.
Like, right.
You kind of had to record it at a certain time. And there were episodes I didn't see until I bought the DVDs.
Right.
Because it would come and go. So they knew, Warner Brothers knew they had something with DC, but they wanted to appeal to different markets. So then they created DC Nation and started putting out all these different kinds of shows. So we had, you had Batman Brave and the Bold, which was really fun, but still kind of a niche show.
Yeah.
And then you had the Green Lantern CG show, which didn't quite work. You had Beware the Batman, which is... one of the only Batman shows to get canceled right
away. It's
like,
how bad you gotta fuck up
a
Batman show to get
it canceled?
It's
not great. Like I said, I have every Batman show, and I have it, but it's not great. And Young Justice was in that. Young Justice came out around Green Lantern and Beware the Batman, where it was just kind of shittled in. And then all of a sudden, the big thing with DC Nation was they started doing these weird shorts. And they threw everything at the wall. You know, they had Weird Al doing Animal Man.
Yeah.
They had Aardman doing Claymation Batman and Superman. They had anime Wonder Woman and, you know, Catwoman shorts and Green Arrow shorts and Amethyst shorts.
Didn't they do Spectre? They like, murders a guy?
No, that was on the DVDs, but it was kind of like what they were doing in the DC Nation shorts.
I think they were called, like, showcases or something, and they do, like, quick 5-minute Green Lantern movie.
And they were
or
doing stuff like that on Cartoon Network in between the two shows that they would run, and all the shows would get canceled, and the shorts would go with them. But in the middle of that, they brought Teen Titans back, and it was just the totally morphed out anime stuff that the old Teen Titans show would jump into and jump out of. And that worked. And then they brought it back. And actually, they changed it considerably from even those shorts, because those shorts are available on YouTube. And I was shocked by how different they were. And they brought it back as a sitcom. And it is the biggest thing in children's television now. It beats SpongeBob.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's so huge. Ben is obsessed with it, that I've seen all of it multiple times. And it is funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, and I appreciate how much it makes a 6-year-old laugh.
Yeah.
But it's not for us, and Young Justice fans despise it because
it's too silly.
It's totally the opposite of what Young Justice was by using the same characters.
Yeah.
But it is a phenomenon that, like, there is nothing this big. Cartoon Network doesn't make anything this big. Adventure Time is not as big.
Yeah.
Regular Show is not as big.
It's
so crazy.
They
don't have anything that comes close to this. So when I first heard that they were doing a Titan show, I was like, well, why try to tap that well twice? You've got this cartoon that is a juggernaut and unstoppable.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it was. Maybe they were trying to do it again to appeal to a different demographic. Not that it would be a sitcom and goofy, you know. Not that it would be Cyborg and Beast Boy talking about burritos for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But I think Warner Brothers looked at Teen Titans Go and was like, all right, this is obviously a big property for us. Let's try to do it again. And they couldn't catch that lightning in a bottle twice. Meanwhile, Teen Titans Go, we're going to have new episodes for a very long time.
Yeah. And it's like I said, it's I don't know, the Teen Titans probably hasn't been this big since Wolfman and Perez. This is probably the biggest as animation.
It's bigger
now. We didn't go wider audience than the comic
Perez,
ever could.
Wolfman and Perez was big in comics, and as we know, comics, you know, the most successful comic, even back in the 80s, doesn't reach as many people as the worst viewed television show.
Right.
You know, a bad the worst a television show can get is like 500,000 people.
Yeah.
There is no comic, maybe in the 80s and 90s, that got those numbers.
And was considered a flop.
Yeah. I mean, there were comics in the 90s that hit 1,000,000 people, and I think we proved at the time that most of those people weren't actually reading
the
comic.
Yeah, it's a lot of, probably a third of it, if not two-thirds, was speculation.
Right, and it was a lot of people buying multiple copies.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think there's really been more than 300,000-400,000 people reading comic books in history.
Yeah.
So Teen Titans Go, this is probably the most popular Teen Titans ever is.
May ever be.
For a property, as we've discussed over the last hour, isn't the most easy to define.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, I've liked runs on it. You know, I like the idea of, and this is something DC has, well, not so much anymore because the New 52 kind of took a shit on all this. But DC used to do, like, me and Dave would talk about it, it's like the legacy characters where it's the sidekicks. Marvel doesn't really do sidekicks. You know, Bucky, right. You know, that's kind of it. The new Hawkeye is kind of like a sidekick to the old Hawkeye. That's really it. Young Avengers is a very new idea in the realm of comics, like the group of young heroes emulating the old heroes. It's something that was unique to DC for a long time, and that was kind of a nice, refreshing thing that the Titans could capture, was that sense of, all right, we're all following in the footsteps of another hero. They're probably some of the best heroes that the world has. We're all going to take their mantles someday. They would do future stories where it would show the Teen Titans all grown up as those heroes. You know, so they did do a lot of cool stuff that were unique to that book. But unfortunately, it's something where it's like you said, it's kind of like lightning in a bottle still, where Wolfman and Perez did this thing that probably can't be replicated. And Geoff Johns maybe did a little of it, but in the comics, you're not really going to get that in the monthly Teen Titans book.
Well, there are some books that need to live in the universe they are. We've talked about Gotham, how Gotham Central would have been the best way to do it. These are the stories that happen when Batman is somewhere else. But if you create a television show, it has to completely live on its own. You know,
yeah, but
even something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So what you're describing with Teen Titans being these sidekicks living up to these big heroes
is not necessarily.
Can you
something...
do a show without those heroes? Even Teen Titans Go will show you Batman,
right?
From time to time, and they explicitly show that this is in the DC universe, and all the other heroes exist,
right?
Whereas with Gotham, they had to make it a prequel to tell you why Batman doesn't
exist.
And
you know what? I don't really subscribe to that about Gotham, because I can hand Gotham Central to any person I bump in on the street, and they can read the whole run and completely understand what's going on, knowing nothing about comics. And they could have done that with this Gotham show. They just, for whatever reason, decided to make it as hard on themselves as possible. Teen Titans, I agree, you probably couldn't, TNT couldn't do a standalone Teen Titans show and not mention or talk about Batman or Superman or these characters, because it's, without them existing, there's no... The Teen Titans don't exist. Robin doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, there's a handful of Titans that do. Cyborg and Starfire and Raven. These characters you can do on their own, and you could probably tell a good story with them. You can't do a Wonder Girl story. Who's Wonder Girl? Oh, she's like Wonder Woman, but she's a teenager. Well, if you're not going to do Wonder Woman, who the fuck is Wonder Girl?
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
So continuing my audiobooks... in the car, one of the books I'm always like, I don't know what to read. So I just kind of look at like classics, and audiobooks is such a shit collection because they don't have like obscure books you'd want to read. So you have to read like the classics of fiction. And Dune, I've always heard, is awesome. And when I'm not confused about what's going on in the book, it's phenomenal. It is. I'm like 10 or 11 discs in, and I think it's like 19 discs or something. So it's like hours and hours and hours, but it's awesome. Unfortunately, I've heard there's this like a series of books. Dune is. Have you ever read this? Dune?
Yeah, there are. No, I saw the movie in the 80s.
Yeah.
Which
is that any good?
You might like it after reading the book. They always say I couldn't follow it, and that
the book you couldn't follow.
I couldn't
or
follow
the movie.
The movie.
Oh
and
wow!
They said the movie's only good if you've read the book and want to see them do the book.
Yeah,
because the story is not clear in the movie by itself. But if you've already read the book, you're like, oh, they're doing this part.
Okay, because it's like I said, I have trouble following it, which is probably more my fault than anything because I like daydream and like I have like a short attention span, so I'll start thinking about like. I don't know, the Avengers or something. And then I come back to the book. I'm like, wait, what's going on? And I've heard it's a series, but I heard the rest of the series is terrible. So I want to keep reading it. And if they do the other audiobooks, I'm probably going to at least do the second one to see how it is. But if anyone knows whether or not the rest of the series is worth reading and how many they did, I'm sure I could find out how many they did.
But at least four.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I've heard it's pretty bad. You know, like, I read Foundation, the Isaac Asimov book, and that I liked. But then that was a series, and then I tried reading the second book and couldn't get through it and gave up. So it's something where it's like, I want to keep reading it, but it's like, I don't know. And it's something where it's like, it would make a good movie, so I'll probably end up watching. Do you think it's on Netflix? Who's got it, you think?
I don't know. The last time I saw it, it just came on Sci-Fi. But like okay. Patrick Stewart's in it, Sting
really?
Is in it. It's got good people in it. Kyle MacLachlan.
I've heard it's terrible.
Kyle MacLachlan stars in it.
I don't know who that is.
He's the mayor on Portlandia.
I don't watch that show because it depresses me for some reason.
What else? He was the captain in How I Met Your Mother.
The captain?
Yeah, it was that guy who like had all the sailing stuff that like Ted was stealing his girlfriend. He was Ray Manzarek in The Doors.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think I can name a lot of stuff that you.
Yeah, you got a good memory for this stuff. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I'll Google it.
I was so happy when IMDb started because
awesome.
The stuff I didn't know is there.
Yeah, IMDb is like I've always wanted to, and somebody's gonna do this at some point, or probably already exists, but they did a shitty job of it. IMDb for comic books, so you could be like, what character appeared in what issues, what creators did what books, what inkers or where. That I think would be very interesting. But
I've wanted that for a while too. Wikipedia is pretty good for it.
Yeah,
but you kind of got to dig a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah.
Like IMDb is an app where you can just go. Like I was watching a movie last night with Tina Fey and Jason Bateman, which was good, but it's not my greatest thing.
Which one was that?
This is Where I Leave You.
Oh, I didn't see it. I like Tina Fey,
and it had like Yellow Jacket was in it, and Kylo Ren is in it.
Oh, really?
And Jane Fonda's in it. It was a big cast. Rose Byrne, who is in everything, is in it.
I've seen that movie. Is that where Kylo Ren's like in a cast on a couch?
No.
What's that
movie? No, this movie,
leg.
Their dad dies and they all come for the funeral.
Oh, and there's like a, yes, I did see that.
Yeah.
And it
came
was
out
it
like
really
last
called
year.
This Is Where I Leave You?
Yes, it came out last year.
And they're like, they have to live in the house for like 3 days to like work through shit.
A week, yeah.
Yeah,
Jane
I did
Fonda's
see it.
The mom.
That was good.
It was good. It was on HBO last night. But the ex-wife in it drove me crazy. And I was asking Renee, and she was like, I've seen her somewhere. And then, so I went, I saw her name in the credits, went to IMDb, and was like, oh, she was on Mad Men. That makes total sense now.
Yeah.
But
IMDb is good for that.
Yeah, that should be a comic one. My greatest thing is actually a comic, which it hasn't been in a very long time.
There haven't been a lot of good comics in a while.
No, and this was came out last year as a series, but I just got the graphic novel of Sandman Overture.
Oh yeah, I tried reading it, and then it didn't come out for like 3 months at a time, and I gave up.
Oh, because J.H. Williams did an amazing job on it.
It
so I'm
looked
sure it
phenomenal.
Took a long time.
Yeah, but it took forever.
I made the decision to wait for the trade.
That's a smart
and
call.
I have the complete run in Absolute. And unfortunately, it's all in the Absolute. So I was like, they're not going to do this 6 issues in an Absolute.
Nope.
So I bought the Deluxe.
The hardcover, yeah.
Yeah, the Deluxe hardcover.
I don't think it's out in trade paperback yet. I think it's just a hardcover right now.
But it's a really nice hardcover.
Oh, it's awesome. Available at Chimera's Comics.
Yes. I put it next to the Absolutes because it belongs there. But what really impressed me, I love Sandman, but I wouldn't say I'm into Sandman.
Yeah.
Like, there is a demographic that is into Sandman.
That's 14-year-old goth girls.
Yeah.
That's the demographic for Sandman.
But it's funny, because DC had a great quote about Sandman. Was they said, with Sandman, we found a whole new demographic of comic readers that won't read any other comic.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's like, they just care about this book.
Yeah, so Sandman sells to people that don't read comics.
Yeah.
And will not make them comic readers.
Nope.
But I've been a reader of Sandman since it was running in the 90s, and I'm a big fan of Neil Gaiman, and I've read some of his books, not a lot, and I've read some of his other comic work, like he did a Batman.
And he's done a few, like
great.
Doctor Who's and such like this, right?
He's done a few episodes of Doctor Who that were really great, and I love him as a writer. And I loved the whole run of Sandman while knowing it wasn't speaking directly to me.
Yeah.
Preacher was something that spoke directly to me. And I'm hoping they do absolutes of that. Maybe with this series coming out, they will.
Yeah, I was going to say that show's coming out, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they did some hardcovers like the Swamp Things one we talked about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
I missed those. Those came and went. But I'm hoping they do absolutes because I loved that series. And it made me a Garth Ennis fan forever. But Neil Gaiman is such a good writer. And the thing that impressed me so much about Overture, it's a prequel that also ties a lot to the series. So I don't know if it should be the first thing you've read, because you've told me you haven't read Sandman.
Yeah, if I wasn't too informed on what was going on in the book. I think it is something you have to read. You have to read Sandman.
I would recommend you read Sandman. I'm sure you have it in your store.
We do.
Start with the first volume. Sam Keith draws it, as we were saying.
Sam Keith.
I like Sam Keith, and he's like half Bernie Wrightson, half Mignola in this one, because he hadn't fully done the Max yet.
Yeah.
So he didn't get into that like graffiti manga art style yet. He's very Bernie Wrightson in this book. But like we were saying earlier in the show, that first volume, he's trying to do Alan Moore, and it's set in the DC universe, like Batman and Martian Manhunter and the Justice League are in it.
Yeah.
And then once he finds his way, it becomes a fantasy book, and he leaves all that behind. But it's a great read, and what impressed me the most about Overture was whenever they do these reunion things, they're never that good.
Yeah.
You know, like we were saying about Force Awakens, people are like, George Lucas should come back. If George Lucas came back, it would be the prequels.
Yeah, it would be.
Which is not that good. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, not that good. Stan Lee writing the last Fantastic Four story, not that good. Roger Stern writing Something Can Stop the Juggernaut, not as good. There's a time and a place. That Iron Man series that Leighton did.
Yeah. I like the idea of them doing that, and it's not the worst thing they could be doing, but
Geffen and DeMatteis did some Justice League.
Yeah, you can't ever recapture something from... It's so era specific.
Yeah, because the people that are doing it aren't those people anymore.
Right.
And there's always going to be that. I completely take this back about Sandman Overture.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Neil Gaiman is so good and he's never gotten worse. Like, he's never coasted.
Yeah, he's always kind of at the same level.
He's always been at a very high level. Even his Doctor Who episodes are really strong.
Yeah.
That, like, he is as strong a writer now as he was in the 90s. So coming back to it, this is actually just as good
as his other
stuff. As the original Sandman was. And I can't think of any series that... And J.H. Williams, who I've liked. I've liked his Batman stuff. I liked his Batwoman stuff, but I was never a big fan.
Yeah.
He did some really good stories in the Grant Morrison run. This is the best work of his career, which doesn't surprise me that this book was late.
Yeah.
Because, like,
he took his time with
it. I stopped and stared at some of these pages.
Yeah.
It took me longer to read these six issues than it's taken me to read a lot of stuff.
Yeah, his Promethea was like that. When he was doing runs at Promethea, was a book where I spent probably more time looking at that book than actually reading that book. Because it was so beautifully done.
Yeah, like Cassidy's Planetary or something.
Yeah.
You know why it took as long as it did.
Right, and it's kind of worth the wait. You know, it's like you said, reading it in one volume is so much more interesting than trying to follow it monthly.
Right. Well, there's a two-year-old trying to break his way into the studio.
He'll do it.
And we're over time. So
that's a good time as any to call it.
You might even be able to hear the rattling
out
of the door. But you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the Captain Comics feed. I have lost a lot of spam bots in the last couple weeks.
There you go.
Which is fine, but then my number went down and I can get depressed about
that.
So please follow me and be a real person.
Help him out.
That'd be great. You can like the Facebook page. Posting a lot of stuff. Starting to post GIFs and memes that, like I said, we got like a ton of hits.
That people like it.
From just a GIF. And that's where the fun stuff happens. And Steven?
You can always find me at 19 South LaGrange Road at Camaras Comics.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!